everyone. This is Tim Pichot, joined with, of course, the one and only John Snyson of The Economic Truth. And today we've got a lot of great things to talk about. I don't know if it's great things, but we've got a lot of important things to talk about. One of them being that the Federal Reserve is basically losing control of the interest rate situation. So what was going on is that banks were charging each other 10% annualized to lend money to themselves overnight, which is, you know, absolutely crazy. We're going to get more to that later on. Also going to get into the fact that the Federal Reserve had to cut interest rates again today, which, you know, no surprise to anybody. And they also said that they're expecting not to have to cut rates either the rest of this year or next year. And I'm going to call it fake news and say about a 0.01% chance of that actually being true. And we're going to get into also, you know, different ways that you guys can help protect your retirement accounts, and not just gold and silver. There are some other things that you guys can do. And then you're going to get into some of the goodies from the press conference. I wasn't able to listen to all of it. I was doing some other work and reading through it, but did, you know, get some pretty good gold nuggets from that. But, you know, first I want to kick it over to John and see what his thoughts are when it comes to all this repo madness that is going on in the financial markets, and see what he thinks about that. So John, take it away.
Yeah, no, I was listening to, Jerome Powell at his live speech today, and, they're trying to, you know, mitigate their risk by saying that, you know, they're constantly watching the economy, but they don't see anything that's a problem at all. But meanwhile, we got to remember back in December. I don't know if anybody remember that call that Mr. Mnuchin, Steve Mnuchin, had with all the top bankers when he was speaking with them about that there were no liquidity crisis, apparently. But now we're seeing a liquidity crisis in the money markets, and it's not a good thing. It doesn't look good, doesn't it, Tim? And what we're seeing right now is a big problem with the Fed. It seems like they're literally losing control here. When they are, you know, losing control of the economy, they're just, you know, shoved in. How much was it, Tim? There was it was $75 billion, and then there was what yesterday?
I believe it was like around 50-ish yesterday, and then 75. I'm trying to fix my mic, so I'll let you take it over.
Yeah. So that's $125 billion that you're looking at in new stimulus into the money markets to keep them afloat. And this is the first time the Fed has actually intervened since the money market crisis. And what is also interesting at the time is there's a unknown fund that will, me and Josh and Rob Kirby and others have actually talked about it and exposed it, which is called the Exchange Stabilization Fund. Remember how they were blaming the Chinese to manipulate their currency? Meanwhile, they have their own Exchange Stabilization Fund, which actually, if you go and search it up, it tells you exactly what it's used for, and it's used to keep the currency stable. Of course, that's what it is. But the Exchange Stabilization Fund, back in the 2008 crisis, if you go and look at their auditable statement that I did for our, you could go and look it up. It's a huge expose on the whole Exchange Stabilization Fund and exposing, you know, the secrets behind it. In 2008, they actually had a massive credit line, the ESF as well, out to the money markets to try to stabilize the money markets. And what you're seeing now currently is, who knows, maybe the ESF is back in the game and they have, you know, reopened that that credit line that they had, you know, to stabilize the markets. And of course, we got to remember that with this comes, you know, a lot of questions. And there was some questions, but there wasn't, you know, any real good questions, because the mainstream media was at the press conference that Jerome Powell held, and they were just asking, you know, dumb questions like, how can we, you know, continue to manipulate the economy, basically, that type of question. There was actually just one question that, you know, really questioned, you know, we've seen this in 2008. Are things okay? Like, are we seeing a healthy world? He was trying to blame, of course, the only risk that's out there is the trade wars that's going on, but nobody is talking about the actual risk of mass amounts of debt in the economy, talking about the corporate debt, the student loan debt, the credit card debt. It's not only the United States, it's debt all across the world. You know, the ECB just reopened their purchase programs of debt, and of course This is a underlying huge issue that we're not really paying attention to. And of course, we covered here as some of the first people, actually, Tim, we covered how the Fed actually has increased its balance sheet again, and that have happened. And now, of course, the current balance sheet is back up to, as of August, this is August 14th, so it's not completely current numbers, but that is at $3.744 trillion. So you're seeing that the Fed is getting back into mode of printing a lot more money. And this time, you know, you printed, well, the balance sheet increased from about 800-something up to $4.4 trillion. What is it going to take this time, you know, to keep the bubble afloat? Is it going to be looking, like, if we were to use that logic, you would have to increase the balance sheet, you know, to maybe 40, close to $40 trillion. And think about all the currency that needs to be printed for that. And maybe you'll get the, you know, the markets, you know, it doesn't seem like they're doing too much though, Tim. This is the interesting thing. You're seeing the Fed is cutting the interest rates. They're going and intervening in overnight lending because overnight lending got out of hand and it was showing signs of a liquidity crisis that doesn't exist according to Steve Mnuchin. But I think there's something there that all this printed money, no matter you know how much you printed, it doesn't seem like it's that liquid to move around in the system. And of course, with the bankers, you know, struggling to lend money to people as debt is over oversaturated in the markets, I think we're in for a dangerous cocktail here. And not to, of course, mention I was talking about the corporate debt that, you know, of course, the ECB is buying lots of. What about the collateralized loan obligation derivatives that's laying on top of that? And what about the credit default swaps that still is being used? I just recently watched again with my dad. And my dad was over here for the first time in like 10 years. The first time I've seen him 10 years over in Canada. So, but I you know, we had a lot of discussions about the money and the economy. And we watched, of course, The Big Short together. And then again comes the questions, you know, are we there? Is this going down right now? As we've seen those tremors that didn't happen since, you know, 10 years ago, well, a little over 10 years ago now, when the Fed actually had to intervene heavily in the money markets to save the global economy as the liquidity just dried completely up, Tim.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of crazy stuff going on. I do apologize that it seems like, you know, there is some audio problems. Hopefully we got things. Actually, you know what? Looks like you can probably hear me, but no one else can. So I don't know. John, you want to take over just a little bit more while I try to fix this again?
Yeah, that's okay. Let me just go into here and look at some of our questions that we have here. Guys, let's see what you guys are up to here. Holy smokes, there's a lot of... and thanks again, Rainy Steps, as last time, you know, you donated. Really appreciate your... super chat there. Let me just go in and take a look here. There's lots of chatter. Of course, everybody's saying end the Fed, which I totally agree with. It's a communist entity that's not, you know, really doing anything good. It's just manipulating the economy, creating mass amounts of bubbles and turmoil around the world and killing people with all of their money printing. Let's see. Yeah, somebody's saying, you know, you should YouTube The Creature from Jekyll Island. Of course, you definitely need to YouTube that and buy the book for of The Creature from Jekyll Island, really understanding how the Fed got created. And of course, Jared Griffin is a good friend of mine. I work with him on the Leadership Council of Freedom Force. And you should check out Freedom Force as well, because that's a great group of people that are trying to, you know, work really hard in our local communities to change things and expose and educate people about all these things, and also, you know, heavily promote true individualism, actually people being free individuals. So let me go down here and check. But again, we're talking about the Fed, you know, decided to cut the interest rates. And of course, I went into great detail about explaining how they now are intervening in money markets to try to save the economy. And the overnight repo rate is basically where everybody is lending money on a very extremely short-term basis. And that just got out of hand. I think, Tim, it went all the way up to up to about 10% or something, I believe, right?
Yeah, it was all the way up to 10%. And some reports say 8, but whether it's 8 or 10 is really immaterial. And yeah, I'm still not working. So let me... try to figure
out. So Tim is saying 10% that it went up to the overnight repo rate, and that versus, you know, the current 2% is, it's pretty crazy. It's pretty insane that, you know, they had you know, up to 10%, and it seemed like it was going to actually come to a massive liquidity squeeze. Of course, the Federal Reserve comes in and prints a whole bunch of money, you know, $125 billion worth of money trying to save the whole economy here. That's basically what they went in and did. They trying to save the corporations, the banksters, you know, that are doing overnight lending in order to keep the economy afloat. But that just shows you how vulnerable the economy is, as you see the issues that you're getting with those short squeezes that could happen, and those out of hand movements that we just had, and it's really interesting how, you know, the Fed seems to really having an issue, really starting to lose the control of the economy. And that is pretty interesting to see. So listening to, you know, of course, what's his name, Powell's speech, it's pretty laughable. It's just basically like Ben Bernanke all over again, you know, coming out and saying that, oh yeah, everything is wonderful. There's no problem in the economy at all. We're doing great, and we're not seeing any issues. Of course, that's, you know, I think there's some issues there. That's just my opinion. Of course, I'm not a PhD in economics like these guys over there at the Fed. But I think I have a little bit of a thought that, you know, there might be some issues here that we're seeing, especially with, you know, the underlying debt problem that's in the corporate sector in the United States. And with now, of course, it was the FedEx today had some serious issues in their stock. They had a drop of 13% today in their stock. So they were seeing some supply issues around the world. And as you see, it's not just the United States, but it's global growth that are, you know, substantially slowing down in the world economy. And with the global growth slowing down, you're really seeing this whole debt, you know, bubble come into fruition, because When debt is not accumulating at a certain pace, you know, to keep up with the 2% inflation, and if you get a deflating debt where, you know, you have bankruptcies and people can't pay their debt, now that is, of course, the worst nightmare of these PhD bankers over there at the central banks.
Actually, I want to see, hopefully you guys can hear me. Ah, damn it, it's still not working. But you have even guys like, what's his name, Jim Cramer, said that this was the most disastrous earnings call that he's ever heard in his life. It says it's most disheartening call about the economy I've ever heard in a very long time. Yeah. And they still can't hear me. So
yeah, and what Tim's saying here is that, you know, Jim Cramer came out and he said that it's probably one of the most disastrous earnings seasons that I've seen in his history, as, you know, yelling and screaming on TV. So you're seeing a lot of people, and even people that are okay, Tim, it says that my audio is off now.
Okay, there's a lag, so as I'm messing around with things, yeah, it's yours is okay. Mine's not.
Okay, yeah, so, but what we're seeing is a serious issue in the global fiat currency economy here. You're seeing nations like there's nations like, of course, in Argentina, you're looking at, of course, we talked about how the U.S. now is, and Trump was talking about doing, you know, 50 to 100 year bonds, same with Argentina. These are not doing very good. And of course, with all these issues, and of course, having the top, some of the top people coming out in the whole economy, with, you know, the hedge fund owners out there, you got some serious guys talking that you should maybe you should look at gold as a, you know, wealth insurance and investing in it. Well, they say investing in it. They don't talk too much about the wealth insurance aspect that you need. We need to seriously get and look at, you know, what's happening in the economy.
Yeah, and even guys like Ray Dalio were talking about that. And I think I finally fixed what the problem was. I had two mics selected before, yeah. And then I had no mic. So if you guys can leave something in the comments if you can hear me. It looks like it's coming through on my end, so I greatly apologize. And we're going live to several different places. So, I mean, if you were just to go live to YouTube, not a big deal at all. I mean, anyone can figure that out. But if you're trying to go live to Float, I've got two different YouTube channels, to a Facebook group, Periscope, all Twitter, all these different places at once. It makes things substantially harder, and do apologize, but you know, there's really no way to, you know, when John isn't on, I'm testing it and it works fine on my end. And then as soon as he comes on, then all of a sudden, you know, Wirecast changes stuff. So yeah, I mean, anyone can go live just to YouTube, but we're trying to go to different channels. I mean, so people always want to complain about, you know, we need to get off YouTube, but then, you know, Josh has like 300 people following him on BitChute, and I've got like 45 on BitChute, and you know, people aren't willing to go there. So, you know, I'm one of the few people that's trying to stream to all these places. So I do apologize, but you know, taking action and being one of the, you know, early people doing this stuff, it's, you know, not easy. So I do apologize. But yeah, that quote from Cramer was, FedEx holds most dispiriting call about the economy I've heard in a very long time. And so that's coming from Jim Cramer, who's basically a perma bull, always optimistic. But one of the major things, so one of the shows that I've been on recently was Free Talk Live. It's the first show in America to start talking about, or probably in the world, to start talking about Bitcoin back when it was worth pennies. I mean, that's where how Roger Ver found out about Bitcoin, was through this show. And when they had me on in February of 2018, I said that I was at Anarchapoco to help try to talk about the ongoing financial collapse. And Ian, the host, said, what do you mean by that? Or what's going to be one of the triggers? And I go, well, one of the triggers, the very first thing I said was, it's when the Fed loses control of interest rates. And ultimately, they should lose control. You should have market dictating rates. So I'm not advocating there should be a Federal Reserve. And when John was plugging The Creature from Jekyll Island, I was trying to say, and if you guys do, you know, get a book and you guys ship it to G. Edward Griffin and pay for shipping and handling, or go see him at one of the many conferences he's at, which is what I did, you can get your book signed. So I would definitely take advantage of that. But
you know, document of ongoing financial collapse as it occurs.
So what kind of collapse are we talking about here? Are we talking about the collapse of the US dollar?
I think ultimately it leads to the collapse of the US dollar, because right now the Federal Reserve is in a rock and a hard place. That's of their own doing. So I don't feel sorry for them at all. But there's really three things they're trying to save. They're trying to save the stock market, the bond market, and the dollar. The real biggie right now is the stock market. It's the bond market. Because when the rates go up, whether it's the market dictating the rates, which is even worse, or the Federal Reserve raising rates.
Wait. Why would the market dictating rates be worse than the Federal Reserve?
You know, I digress a little bit. But what we saw with the Fed losing control of the interest rates, if they can set a Fed funds rate of, you know, 1.75 to 2%, which they just did. But if the market says, you know, we are only going to accept X, or if you're a bank and you're like, well, hey, I'm not going to lend to Deutsche Bank because Deutsche, you know, allegedly, if they need a bunch of money, then, you know, you're not going to get it at any cost. And now some of the factors that they were trying to say caused this were things like, you know, it's end of the quarter. And so companies have big tax receipts. Well, I mean, everybody knows that that's coming up. I mean, that shouldn't be a big surprise to anybody. I mean, another theory could be that there was several banks or institutions or funds that were on the wrong side of the oil trade. And so all of a sudden, you know, Monday night or Sunday night, oil goes up 20%. And if you were short oil or had the, you know, you're selling different contracts, and all of a sudden, you know, your position blew up and you're in need of money. If you have to have a certain reserve requirement, whatever money you can get it at is the cheapest amount. So if you need to have this and you've got to go up to 10%, you're only doing that for desperation. So it's amazing that banks will lend out money for 30 years for, or the government will lend that money 30 years for, you know, basically nothing. But yet, when it comes to lending money overnight, they're at one point got up over 10%. And so it just shows what a fragile and broken system this is. But what this ultimately means is that now the Federal Reserve, this is only, you know, the first salvo and many, that next step is going to be, you know, printing more money. I believe Jerome Powell did even hint at that. And I think his quote, very Orwellian, you know, of course he doesn't come out and just say, we're going to print more money. But what he says is, and this is a quote, it is certainly possible that we'll need to resume the organic growth of the balance sheet sooner than
organic.
Organic growth. Like, yeah, it's pressing like a bunch of buttons on my keyboard is somehow making this organic growth. I mean, it's just such a...
Hey, Hey, Tim, sorry to interrupt you, but organic growth for the Fed is like talking about selling, you know, organic food to you, and which is laden with pesticide. That's what organic growth is to me. But
the Fed is talking about. Jeffrey Epstein was organically getting, you know, 12-year-olds to massage him, you know, or just organically. I don't know how it was happening. Another funny, there was a ticker at the bottom of CNBC, and this is on Zero Hedge, where it goes, Powell, funding pressures have no implication on monetary policy stance. I mean, what is he smoking there? That you have, maybe he's not smoking, you know, a vape anymore, because, you know, you're not allowed to do that, and, you know, he's probably up there in Washington or New York, nanny state. But, you know, he's trying to say that that funding pressures don't affect monetary policy. I mean, is this like some sort of joke? And I didn't get to listen to I only got this tiny bit of the press conference, like probably 5% of it. So I don't know, you know, if anybody else called him out on that. I doubt they did. But this is the opening shot of what is going to happen. And I can't even believe we even got to the point where, you know, let's back things up to last year around this time, or it was like October 3rd of last year or 4th. You had Jerome Powell said we're on autopilot. We're going to keep having $50 billion a month going off our balance sheet. And I was out here on several podcasts, several. I've got, if you guys head to my YouTube channel, I've got I'm spoofing Peter Schiff, and I made a Tippett Show Was Right video with all the proof of different things that I've talked about, which is, you know, crazy ridiculous of some of the things that I've said that have come true. And when it comes to the Federal Reserve, I'm like, how are we going to finance a $1.2 trillion deficit, which is, you know, going to be $100 billion a month. Plus you're going to have, you know, another $50 billion a month coming from the Fed. So what, $150 billion in treasury bills in the best case scenario? That doesn't even count things like, I mean, the budget doesn't even count things like hurricanes or other stuff that happens every year. I mean, it's just, that's off balance sheet items. And so I'm like, so now we go from the standpoint of we're going to sell $50 billion a month to now we're going to inject $70 billion overnight. I mean, at that, can we take a victory lap on this, that, you know, that we were calling this absolutely correct? And they go, I mean, complete opposite. I mean, not only they can't even get away with not even selling money, they're selling bonds, and now they've got to inject $70 billion overnight. Excuse me. But it's just absolutely insane, you know, the trajectory of where things are going. And this is in the boom times. This is in the best economy in the history of the world, supposedly. And, you know, obviously, you know, people that are watching this right now know that that's BS, know that that is the case. And so what I'm thinking is the rates are going to be going back down to zero. Eventually they're going to be underneath zero. And then, which, you know, I think actually Trump had a tweet today that said something like, you know, what a weak press conference by the Fed, clueless, they lack vision, they lack communication. Well, guess what? You know, Donald Trump, you're the one that put him there in power. And oh yeah, the day he did, I came out of the podcast saying that he was probably one of the worst people you could have put in there. And why are you listening to people like Steve Mnuchin, former Goldman Sachs? And why are you listening to Gary Cohn, who's a big carbon tax Hillary supporter, who was one of your top, he was the top economic advisor. So it's just absolutely crazy, the stuff that's going on. I mean, I mean, it's like, I know I sound like a broken record saying things are absolutely crazy, but the fact that, you know, you have the overnight lending rate got up to 10%, and then it's basically three nights in a row. I mean, and this is, you know, absent what if the Fed didn't step in, you know, where would things go? I mean, we'd have, this could be another Lehman type event. So what I think is going to happen now is you're going to see Donald Trump probably starting more trade war tensions to then, you know, F things up more, to then force a some sort of event to then justify having more quantitative easing. But what I will point out, that you also have, you know, about a week or two ago, you had the Fed's balance sheets actually increase. So, you know, I didn't hear any announcement of quantitative easing, yet you had the balance sheet increasing, which is, you know, I think very important to note. And one thing that John and I did not get to talk about a couple weeks ago, because we ran out of time, I just want to, you know, get that out there now, is that the former New York Fed head, I believe it's Bill Dudley, actually, you know, wrote an op-ed talking about how the New York Fed and the Fed needs to basically sabotage Trump and not do anything to help him out. So the fact that they are like forced to do this hand, they don't want to do this. I mean, they're being forced to do this. And I mean, that's something else that I saw a mile away. But for those of you who don't know, the New York Fed is the most powerful Fed branch. They basically run the show. And I'm not looking at any notes here right now, but I believe, what is it? Is there four rotating members of the FOMC plus the New York Fed, or does the New York Fed make it four? But either way, it's four or five. New York Fed has a permanent seat on there. And basically, who's ever at the helm of the New York Fed is basically the real guy running the show, not Jerome Powell, not Ben Bernanke. They're the real shadow puppet master, you know, who's taking Wall Street's orders, which during the financial collapse, which we actually are pretty much, this is the anniversary of the financial collapse, was 3 days ago. So that happened 11 years ago when Lehman Brothers went down. I know because it was my
interesting first thing how it just started to inject money right after, you know, the anniversary. It's almost kind of hilarious.
At the anniversary, I got you $75 billion.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you gotta give some to the bankers to remind them how great of a, you know, scammers they are, Tim. You know, what's funny? We got talking into negative interest rates here, and there's somebody that mentioned, somebody needs to make a video explaining the logic of negative interest rates. Well, actually, there is zero logic, as he kind of says himself, Biddletube. But, you know, what's interesting, though, is I actually predicted negative interest rates. And, you know, I saw that negative interest rates were happening. Actually, my book here, The End of Freedom, Harm, Monetary System, and Slaves Us, that came out in 2015. You know, let me just say a little bit about here what I said here. John is passionate about teaching people about how monetary system is deemed to fail and how we can protect ourselves from the certain failure. He predicted the quantitative easing from central banks around the world that will create eventually deflation, but he also is seeing that in a panic, this might also cause a hyperinflation by, you know, the programs that they have. He also predicted the move by Switzerland, Denmark, Sweden with negative interest rates, and the many rate cuts that will pursue, because like here, actually, I talk about the future, many rate cuts that will pursue around the world, and not interest rate hikes, as many experts have been calling for. So actually, this is my 2015 book where I've been saying exactly what has happened now. And you've seen that, you know, this is, you know, very predictable because, of course, first of all, they've written papers upon, you know, calling for negative interest rates, not, you know, 0.65 or 0.1% or whatever they have, you know, different central banks. No, they're calling for -4, -5%, but they also need a cashless society in order to pull that off. Because if we went to -3 or 4% or 5% now, everybody would pull their money out of the banks, their physical money. And then when they pull the physical money out, as I've shown with my, you know, cash to deposit ratios, that's a serious issue. That there's the cash to deposit ratio is next to nothing in most of the banks worldwide that I looked at. And I looked at all the biggest ones. And then also the Canadian banks are just terrible. And they believe that, you know, they're just going to inject, you know, $150 billion in 2 days, $125 billion in 2 days, in just 2 days. Let that sink in a little bit, because nothing like that ever happened back in 2008. There was a $2 billion line of credit from the Exchange Stabilization Fund at the time. And now you're seeing, you know, a massive injection of $125 billion. But that's what happens with money printing. With money printing, you just have a lot more money, you know, slushing around into the economy. And of course, the problem with this and what they're seeing is, and what Jerome Powell said in his speech too today, Tim, is, you know, they're looking at, you know, increasing asset prices. That's their number one target, of course. And that is, you know, floating more debt into the system, lowering interest rates so more people can get indebted to keep this Ponzi scheme alive. Because what a lot of people have said, and this brings me to my second book, Canada, the Greatest Economy in the World? They've been saying that, you know, the banks in Canada has, you know, really thrived. I listened to, I forgot, there was some kind of a, I think it was an economist somewhere that said, you know, they actually attail all the growth in Canada to all the immigration that have happened. And that is correct, because what they use the, many of the immigrants to, they are, you know, heavily pushing to indebt them to keep this Ponzi scheme alive here in Canada. And of course, this is just the perpetuation of what's been going on, you know, with central banks around the world. They increased from 2008 to 2018, Tim. On an average, I looked at the 72 biggest central banks. There was 333%. That they increased their balance sheet by. And by increasing the balance sheet, I mean, they bought up all the bad debt around the world. They bought up, you know, mortgage-backed securities, which is not really debt. It's just instrument that is, you know, derives off of the debt of an asset that is underlying, you know, a corporation called special purpose vehicle. So you're just seeing like all of this money has, you know, it's just been slushing around. And of course, it becomes a big problem worldwide when you see all of these, you know, mechanisms that just calling for, they need more inflation and more debt. And of course, what we got to remember, this deflation that is happening on the economy, that is, you know, the ultimate nightmare of the Federal Reserve. And as, you know, Jerome Powell said, you know, if the time comes, you know, we'll put out anything, any of our, you know, policies or that we had or that is new in order to save the economy. So that is what they're saying here. So meanwhile, he's saying that everything is completely fine, but he's also saying that they're willing to, you know, use all the ammunition available from the central bank to try to manipulate the economy back up again as it's, you know, slowing down severely here.
Yeah, it makes me think of like the Lego songs, like everything is awesome, everything is cool, and you're part of the team. But obviously, you know, I can't really carry a tune. But another book I'd recommend would be Harry Dent's The Demographic Cliff. I don't, you know, obviously don't agree with like everything he says, but what it talks about in the book is that you have the demographic issues that are going on. I believe the baby boom was from 1946 to 1964.
Yeah, which is a massive point. Yeah, it's a very good point, by the way.
The average person in their lifetime spends the most amount of money age 46. Age 46, if you then, you know, look at the baby boom, they would have reached their peak spending in 2008, and then look what happened. And then the other thing you had in 2008 is you had the oldest baby boomers were just starting to turn. The oldest ones, the ones who were born in 46, were just starting to turn 62 years old. So they weren't actively pulling their money out of these pension funds, out of their 401ks or their IRAs. Well, now it's 11 years later. And now the oldest ones are now 73. And most of the baby boomers are now of retirement age if they can afford to retire. And what is going on is that they realize they didn't save nearly enough money. I think half of Americans have, you know, less than like 200, half of like baby boomers have less than like $200,000 in retirement savings. And there's probably, it's probably even less than that. And so, okay, great. You're getting like $4,000 a year of income.
And Tim, what we got to remember, they're going to have to sell their assets in order to retire. How are they going to sell their, who's going to buy all those assets that the baby boomers have, that the pension funds have?
And the bigger problem is the fact that all these unfunded liabilities, it's a Ponzi scheme. So they need to have more young blood coming in there, which is why there's a push to have all the immigrants. And actually, if you're an immigrant, I'm like, you know, you shouldn't even come here to America because you're just going to be, you know, putting a giant shackle on you. But, you know, they want to have, there's the birth death ratio. I forgot exactly what it's at. It's like 1.9, I think, but you need to have it at least 2.1 just to replace the ratio. And without even getting political, this is not a political statement, but you cannot mathematically have this Ponzi scheme entitlement system and abortion. It's just a mathematical equation, is that you always, in this type of system we have, you always need to have the other generation massively bigger than the other one, so that way they can prop up the entire system and keep things going. It's not a political statement. Okay, great. You know, if you guys want to have your abortions, well, then fine. Then don't make me pay into your Ponzi scheme. I mean, is it, you know, that much to ask for? That, you know, if you want to kill your child, that I don't have to pay for it.
Yeah. Now,
obviously, people could probably see, you know, what side of, you know, I was born to 19-year-old parents. So, I mean, people can probably see what side of the argument I stand on there. But it's just, you know, it's a pure mathematical equation that you cannot have, you know, generations underneath you supporting smaller generations, supporting bigger generations. And I think when Social Security started, you had like 64 people paying in for every person that was receiving benefits. And now, you know, it's probably, you know, 2-to-1. You know, what happens when it's 1-to-1? What happens when it's, you know, 1-to-2? I mean, this can't go on forever. Best case scenario is that, you know, you still get paid your Social Security, you still get paid your pension, but the money doesn't mean anything. So great, you're a firefighter or policeman, you're getting $50,000 a year in retirement, but now we print a bunch of money and now your $50,000 buys you the equivalent of $2,000.
Yeah. Yeah, and also what we got to remember, Tim, if interest rates were to go up to, you know, save these pension funds, especially the government that around the world, the United States, would go bankrupt.
I mean, they're damned if they do, damned if they don't. If the interest rates go up, what happens is the underlying bond acts like a teeter-totter. So let's say you have a 0% bond for 30 years, the rates go up 1%, the underlying value of that bond would then decrease by 30%. Rates go up 2%, it would go down, you know, slightly by more than 60%. You know, even, and that's the same as if it's, you know, one, so if you have a 10-year bond, You know, rates go up 1%. The underlying value of your bond goes down by 10, goes up by 2%, goes down by a little bit over 20 if you have to liquidate. And so in this case of a negative interest rate bond, you're not even getting any money to cover your expenses. So of course you've got to liquidate. And most people don't, you know, aren't rich enough to just live off their interest because A, they don't have enough money, and B, the interest rate's like nothing. So even if they had a 10% interest rate, a lot of people probably couldn't even live off that.
Just buy, you know, Tim, here's the best pension advice for anybody. Buy a whole bunch of negative yielding debt. That's how you should retire, Tim. You know, you could live off of the negative interest rate that you got to pay.
Yeah, and I do have to pick up my daughter soon, so I've got to leave in about 5 minutes. But what I will want to say, because I did sort of tease that there is, you know, other things besides gold and silver. And one of the strategies that I started implementing right around this time last year, and I have videos that prove that it was right around this time last year, is this would be a great strategy to help election proof your portfolio, you know, no matter where you are in the world. I am a financial advisor, so, you know, if you don't want to, you know, give us a dollar here to there, you know, one of the ways you can support us is becoming a client of myself. So this is a shameless pitch, but this is great, I think, information. And so one of the things that we're doing with our clients is that we're buying basically downside protection on a lot of these major averages. So if the stock market goes down, our clients' portfolios, we have a finite amount that they could possibly lose. So, you know, in many cases, it's, you know, let's say it's 5 to 8%. And that's assuming even gold and Bitcoin, everything else goes down to zero too, which, you know, probably isn't. So, you know, if everything went down to zero, we could say, hey, we can quantitatively pinpoint what's the most you could lose. On the other hand, if the Fed, because I think the market's only going to go down, you know, maybe 20-30%, and then the Fed's going to have to print so much money that eventually on a long enough time horizon, the market's going to go stupid. And just like it did in Germany, if you were, you know, if you wanted to be safe and keep all your money in gold marks in Germany, well, guess what? Eventually that collapsed, and then it collapsed, I think it was the Renmark, then that collapsed, then into the Reichsmark, then that collapsed into the Deutschmark, and then that got taken over by the Euro. And now that's probably going to be unwound and go back to the Deutschmark or whatever. But if you wanted to be really, really safe and keep all your money in Deutschmarks or whatever the currency was of the day, basically you got wiped out 4 times in the span of like 20 years. But if you wanted to buy something like Mercedes-Benz stock in 1900, which they were around back then, the oldest car company in the world, now your shares would just be priced in different currency units. So you were maybe still losing some of your purchasing power, but you still had an asset you're retaining versus just keeping money in the bank, keeping all your money. And, you know, we have different strategies. So we have self-directed IRAs too, where people can do more advanced things with their retirement, like put a little bit of it into gold or crypto, you know, maybe Airbnbs, if that's your thing. And so I'm not saying I'm an expert in everything, but, you know, we allow you to become the expert in what you are the expert in. And then we also have some of the, and for people that don't want to dabble in the other stuff, and they're more traditional, well, we have some, I think, great traditional strategies that will protect the downside. And what we saw, you know, last October through December is I didn't have any clients call me up that were nervous or concerned because they saw their statements basically little to unaffected. Now, I should have just sold all my put options at the end of the last year, and that would have been the best thing to do. But what I do want to stress, if you don't know what a put option is, do not go out and like try to do this yourself, because you can be on the wrong side of it really quickly if you don't know what you're doing. You don't always want to run this strategy because there is a drag in your portfolio. But I think we're in crazy, crazy times right now where, you know, basically I think the market is going to go down a little bit. Then the Fed's going to print so much money that eventually it's going to go back up. But, you know, if you're 65 years old, you don't have, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 years to wait. If you're fit, you know, if you're about to retire or just retired, you can't, you know, go and wait unless you've got, you know, a lot of money sitting on the sideline and you've got other strategies. And so I am a certified financial planner. This part educational, part pitch, but that is, you know, I want to save you guys ahead of time. I don't want to be like, oh, well, you know, I've had a couple of videos that only like 50 people saw, and, you know, sorry, I didn't want to pitch, and now you guys lost half your money, or you kept it in, or you lost half your purchasing power because you kept it in, you know, a bank account, and you're going broke safely. And which, on the Federal Reserve's own website, you had the former vice chair of the Fed, Stanley Fisher, also I'll point out, Israeli citizen, which, you know, why is an Israeli citizen on the board of the vice chair of the Fed, which I would say that about any citizen of any country outside of America. But what is going on with that is he actually said in a 2014 speech in, I think it was either Sweden or Switzerland, I think it was in Sweden, where he said that we're going to issue bail-inable bonds, and that basically the next financial crisis is that we're going to basically take your money. And there's been rules and different money market stuff where basically it says that your money at the bank is a, you know, basically an asset of the bank that they can use you know, in the event that they're not solvent anymore.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and they've been using it to invest in, you know, terrible investments. Look at, you know, the bets that Cyprus Larnaca and Cyprus Bank did, you know, back in the day, they were betting on the Greece banks to fail, and then they got bailed out, and then they were on the hook for all that money. And then, of course, they failed and got bailed in. And it didn't, you know, today, people that think that, you know, this deposit insurance going to save them, please take a look at, because I heavily have gone into the biggest countries of Canada, Australia, and a little bit into the United States, looking at how much they actually have of money, in these funds that are supposed to, you know, insure the deposits under 100,000 euros, under $100,000 and so on. They don't have a lot of it. You know, in Canada, they have 0.39% of that. And if one big bank goes afray here in Canada, you know, there it's going to be at least 5% of the deposits that's going to be on the hook here. And 0.39% is not going to cover 5% of the deposits. And of course, in Australia, they have the financial claim scheme, which is covering 20. Actually, the government is covering it there. They say that they're going to put in the case of a bank problem or bankruptcy in a bank, they're going to put in the government is supposed to put in $20 billion, infuse that into the banks. But the problem is the banks there have 60 to 900 billion dollars on their under deposits. How is that going to do any dent or save any, you know, deposits? So all these schemes that are supposed to be insurance and protect the, you know, the people that willingly have their money in the banks that they've given to the banks that is not theirs anymore. It's not your money anymore. And you are going to, if you believe that and you think that banks are safe, you're going to be in for a you're just going to be not very happy when this next financial crisis comes, because that is what's going to happen next, is the systemically, a failure of a lot of banks around the world. And with that, the whole monetary system will come and unravel, within it, because you cannot prop up this Ponzi scheme forever. And of course, for people that, you know, I see a lot of great people are in the chat that are, you know, of course, educated, that have been watching us for a while and are smart people, you know, they're talking about gold, silver, and crypto. And that is the solution. And the gold and silver is the wealth insurance. And for me, crypto is the bankster failure insurance, you know, the bank failure insurance, because what happened with Bitcoin back in 2013 when they had the bail-in in Cyprus, everybody started using it because they had capital controls of 60, euros a day that came out to the individuals. Meanwhile, they could use freely, Bitcoins if they actually managed to get their wealth over in that. And that way they were able to, you know, kind of keep the economy a little bit afloat. Instead of, you know,
so they let you take out $22,000 a year is their limit. And I do see a lot of great comments in here, but we got one guy in here who's like, hey, this guy is so short-sighted talking about Mercedes stock. He has no idea what is coming down the pipeline with economics or climate. I said, if in the year 1900, which means is 119 years short-sighted. I'm giving an example off the top of my head of a company that was around in Germany in 1900. So, I mean, do you have a better one? I mean, the person that's out there with, you know, these examples, I mean, that's crazy. And I was saying that in that example, I didn't say go out and buy Mercedes stock. I said, if you had did this in 1900, it would have been better than holding on to Goldmark, Renmark, Reichmark, currencies that all.
Anything is better. Like anything, especially commodities, are way better than holding any currencies over time. If you hold a currency over 100 years, it's mostly have lost every single bit of value that it had before. So people got to understand that. And that's not me just coming up with that. That's me looking at, you know, 300-400 different currencies throughout history. They always, you know, they value over time because the possibility to, you know, print currency out of thin air, or now it's just electronic digits out of thin air, they will misuse it. They will do it. And there's no doubt that, you know, they'll continue this until people are saying, this is enough. I can't afford anything anymore. Look at the Gilets Jaunes, Hong Kong, like everything.
When people have nothing, they have nothing to lose. And that's why I've got about 2 minutes because I do have to go pick up my daughter. So I got a hard stop here. But somebody we got Path to Ruin says, what if they confiscate all the gold again? Well, then you got to make sure that they don't know where your gold's at. And then I also think that is less likely to happen just because in 1933, we were still on a gold standard technically until, you know.
Not a lot of people actually gave the gold in though. That's the thing as well. You got to remember that. And even they had this in Zimbabwe too, Tim, where they, you know, it was penalty by death or something in Zimbabwe if you use gold and silver. People didn't listen. They used gold and silver because nobody gives a shit about the government. When things hit the fan, people are hungry, they will do whatever it takes to, you know.
That's why I'm glad I'm in Arizona and Josh is in, you know, in Vegas where heavy gun culture. Actually, gold and silver is actually legal tender here. And I went and actually was at the Capitol with Ron Paul trying to advocate for that. It happened to be International Women's Day. And then I had a whole big fracas where I basically caused all 100, over 100 women to leave. Just because of me, and there's actually a video of that somewhere that I live stream. And they broke my brand new iPhone, very, very tolerant liberal leftist, which I was only there for the Ron Paul legalized gold and silver. I think it's just easier this day and age for them to print a bunch of money. They didn't in 1933, they could have never envisioned what's going on today when they did that.
Yeah. So, I mean, and they created the exchange stabilization fund with that confiscated money.
Yeah, lots of different things that they could do. But I do have to got to pick my daughter up, otherwise, and I'm gonna call from the school. So I do.
Yeah,
have to...
it was a pleasure having all of you guys on. We're very happy to have all of you on, and you know, continue to watch us. Me and Tim will try to do this, you know, once a week. Try to get, you know, live stream, because I think there's gonna be a lot to talk about in the coming months, Tim. So we gotta, you know, give you the real insights here of what's happening, the insights and mechanics of the whole world economy, and try to make sense for you and help you, you know, in a way so you could protect yourself a little bit better about what's actually coming down the line here.
Yeah, definitely. And then, you know, make sure too that, you know, we're going to try to see if we can have this standardized, that we'll do this Wednesdays at 6 o'clock Eastern time. If that ends up, you know, working out is what we're going to try to shoot for. But, you know, as things, you know, dematerialize and get worse and worse and worse, you know, check us out on those other platforms. I'm going to start using Instagram more. I'm still trying to figure that out, but you know, we've got that going on. I mentioned Flow. I'm not using it as much, but you know, I am, you know, trying to push that as well. BitChute for all the archiving and different, and just, you know, text number two below. I've got, you know, my free ebook there. So, you know, not there to spam you guys. It's, you know, backup method of communication to be able to get the information out. Cause you know, we can't, you know, basically, you know, Josh had 500 people unsubscribe the other day on his, you know, video about people that were unsubscribed, you know, so it was sort of crazy, but I do have to go hard stop. Yeah. You know, definitely appreciate everybody that's out there for putting up with all the stuff that was going on with the live stream. You know, it's not easy trying to do everything live and control the things yourself and shoot out to all these different places and got 3 TVs and Zooms and all sorts of other stuff is crazy, but do appreciate it. It will keep getting better. I'm Tippecoe and this is John Snyson, and we're World Alternative Media. Find the truth.
Be the change.